This is Tiffany Pewitt. I am interviewing Shakil Rashed. It is July 30th, 2019, and this is for the Muslim Voices in Texas Oral History Project. So the first question I'd like to ask you is just about your story, your life history. So just tell me about your background, where, how you grew up, any kind of defining moments, and kind of what makes you you.
Absolutely. So most of my life, when I think about my life, I kind of think about prior to coming to America, which was 1991. It was August 1991, and the life after coming to USA. I came here as a grad student to George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Of course, I had lots of other choices, but for some reason, Washington, D.C. appealed to me. It was more a choice about the city than the choice about the university. So that was one of the instances that I defined my life as part of that. And if we go back prior to that, I was born and raised in a city called Hyderabad, India. This is one of the lesser known cities of India. Most people, when they think about India, they think about Mumbai, Delhi, Chennai, which used to be called Madras, or Calcutta. Or if they're in the tech area, they would think about Bangalore, which is what the four or five more well-known cities of India are. Hyderabad is pretty unique as one of the cities right after Bangalore. And now most people associate that as the second IT type of a city, right? Growing up in Hyderabad, it's a very unique, I would say, as a background. One of the few cities that has a Muslim majority in India. That's actually one of the reasons I think there is some sense of that confidence that a lot of Indian Muslims may not have that Hyderabadi Muslims will always have, right? So overall, if you think about Hyderabad, a city which, it was actually a city-state. Prior to 1948, Hyderabad was a completely different kingdom altogether, recognized as itself, not part of India. The ruler of Hyderabad was considered one of the richest guys in the world at one time. So all the heritage and the history that comes with being part of Hyderabad is fairly important for me, right? The other part of my childhood that really defines, and I'm actually wearing a t-shirt just to specify that right now, is my school. I went to a school run by Catholic Brotherhood. And this is very common in India. Most of the good schools are run by some church-related organizations. Somehow that's a heritage from the British India that was there. A lot of the good schools ended up being run by various church groups, right? So I grew up in Hyderabad, which, like I said, had a Muslim majority. Went to a Catholic-run school run by very strict brothers, no nuns. And then most of my friends who I grew up with happened to be Hindus. Again, that's one of the ways of thinking about India, is a Hindu majority state with pockets of places with various different faiths in there, right? So Hyderabad as such is one of those places that has all of these things combined. You mentioned something earlier when we were just chatting about secular places. Our definition coming from India for secular is respecting each other's faith rather than no faith, mm-hmm. or ignoring the faith. I think in the West, it took me some time to get used to, the word secular in the West was used more to ignoring the faith, mm-hmm. rather than respecting each other's faith, right? In India, definitely, we use the word secular. Now, actually, it's getting more of the Western style definition also. But in India, we always meant secular to be respecting everybody's faith. So growing up, we celebrated all the holidays, whether it was Hindu festivals, and I still do. I actually still do when it's holy. During spring every year, me and my family still go to one of the Hindu temples and enjoy the festival there. When it's Deepavali, which is another big festival in Hindus, we celebrate that too along with our friends. I've been comfortable going to a church for Christmas Mass very early from my age. And then, of course, at home, we had the Islamic teaching, right? So my grandfather, from my mother's side, used to actually give us marks for going to the five daily prayers. He would actually specify to the kids saying, yeah, today you got full marks because you went to all of these prayers. So and so did, because they did not go to that. So that's something that you grow up with when you're growing up in India. You definitely grow within your own family and community focusing on that religion. Then you have friends who follow another religion, but also when you're traveling on the roads there, religion is everywhere, right? There are temples everywhere. There are loudspeakers going out everywhere with different religions and everything. And then there are the school and friends and everything, right? So I think that's one of the things that you think about when growing up. But then it's also one of those things where it's there everywhere, but it's also something you start ignoring as you grow up. Mm. Right? It's like it's one of those things that you take for granted. Right? It's everywhere, so you start taking it for granted. I mentioned about my grandfather, but other than my grandfather, not a lot of my other family was so religious. So it's like one of those things where you are not like every decision of your life is based on religion. Right? People have religious beliefs to a spectrum, right? Some people would define a lot of their life and decisions based on their religious beliefs. Some people do it for the ritual's sake. Mm-hmm. Some people are somewhere in the middle, right? So what I would refer to myself as somebody who went to Friday prayers regularly out of a sense of ritual, and rest of my life was okay. That's not the most important part of our lives, right? So that's how we grew up. We actually grew up that way. Where yes, we were Muslim, but we also didn't make every one of our decisions based on that, mm-hmm. right? We didn't make we did it more out of where we were and everything else. Another part of my life as well as my childhood, my mother has been a great influence for me. She was more of the intellectual type that didn't. So she was a part of the poetry circles and literary circles and everything else, and the people in those circles didn't look at people in the religious circles as somebody lower in intellect. Mm. Right? So people the idea in India was literature and all of these things have a greater, I shouldn't say greater level, but there's an intellectual level for a person involved in literature and deep thought and poetry and all of these things versus people who go to the mosque regularly and just pray and come back. So there was definitely a intellectual versus regular guy mm-hmm. kind of thing. And my mom actually believed that she had gone beyond some of these things. She used to look down upon people who did the burqa, the veil. Mm-hmm. She actually was very against people wearing veils back when I was growing up as a child. Later on, she actually started wearing one herself out of various different scenarios later on. But when I was as a young child growing up, I didn't think that much about people who were super, who were conservative, who were very religious. To me, that was like, okay, that's not so smart people, right? But that's one of the influences that we have had overall when we were growing up. So that defines some of the things that I came to U.S. for. U.S., when I came to the U.S., again, right? The perception outside of U.S. and everywhere else, people don't think about Western societies being very religious, right? They don't. Most of the people don't associate religion and Western societies very much. I was 21 when I came to this country. I actually was surprised at how important religion was to people here. And one of the things that I was really surprised about when I came here was that to everybody, my identity as a Muslim was more important than anything else. And that kind of surprised me a little bit because I always thought myself more as, from like education point of view, as an engineer, as a technical person, as all kinds of things. But somehow that identity of, hey, you're actually a Muslim. And that's something that I'd not thought about a lot before coming to U.S., mm-hmm. right? It's something we did. Again, this is, like I said, in if you're in India, there is no ignoring of religion. It's everywhere. But it's also one of those things that we take it for granted, and we don't put that as our identity. We might put it as Indian, we might put it as Hyderabadi, but we don't put a Muslim or Hindu or a Christian label on ourselves that clearly, right? But when I came to U.S., that label became more important from others. I had a really close friend who was from Germany, and after the first, and again, we are friends till now, 20 plus years later, one of his first questions, he grew up in Germany, and his question to me is, why are Muslims so fatalistic? And I'm like, what do you mean? Then I had to actually look up the meaning of the word fatalistic. And I understood what he was asking. I had to think about it, because when he asked the question, initially, I was like, no, Muslims are no more fatalistic than any other people. I don't think that's true. But then he gave me examples. And then I thought about it a little bit. I went back, looked up the meaning, I thought about it a little bit. And yes, Muslims are fatalistic. There is a reason for that. Because of the faith. That's part of the faith, that we have that belief that there are things that happen that we control, and then there are things that we don't control. And sometimes people can attribute more to the things that they can't control. And sometimes they do it more than what is required. And that's where the fatalism comes into the picture. Right? So that's one of the questions that truly helped me initially to start seeing some of these things because of what some of the other people said. So, I think coming out of India and coming to US kind of helped define that identity, not just by my own self, but also how other people saw who I was, right? Again, a lot of things don't get defined in India versus they get more defined here. Growing up in Hyderabad, I never thought too much about, maybe a little bit about the color of my skin, but here it became very obvious. I was darker than most people. Actually, in DC, some of the African American guys would come and compare their skin with mine, right? So those are things that would not have been obvious back in India versus what was here. But then again, in the US also, we were so focused on we are new to this country and we have to do well and do other things and all of that. So that focus became what kind of continued on with the regular lifestyle. Job was more important than anything else. But more and more, you started getting defined as a Muslim. In my early US days, I think my most association used to be the same thing that I did in India, was to go for Friday prayers, right? And that was my association with being a Muslim. But the other thing that came with that, in India it was very easy, right? You went to the mosque, you got out, and you went back home, right? Here, the mosque is more than just a place for praying. It's also the community that you're part of. And that's where it starts becoming a little bit more about you are that. You are a Muslim, right? I'm going to stop and see if we want to jump to the next question. But does that give you a good idea about the life and background?
That's great. Yeah.
Right.
So my next question was just to ask you to talk a bit about your Muslim identity, which you have already been talking about. It's very interesting to hear you talk about kind of how that shifted with your move for graduate school. Yeah. So can you say more about that
and how that evolved? So again, like I said, during grad school, of course, I started associating more with Muslims and again going with Friday prayers and everything else. But like I said, in the US it's not just about going to prayers and getting out, it was also the community that you hung out with, right? So if you're fasting during Ramadan, you're generally with the community and you're part of that. Other things start coming into the picture with that, right? So it becomes start becoming us versus them at some point, which is one of the things that I always did not like. So I kind of pull myself out of those type of environments most of the time. But then, of course, you have that feeling for Fridays, I have to go to prayer, so you still want to be involved. Early 90s, one of the big problems in the world was what was happening in Europe with Bosnia and all of that area, right? There were some protests that were happening during that time. Being in Washington, D.C., you always got involved with things like that. Of course, a lot of people would say, hey, don't be so active about these kind of things, but then I've always been fairly social as a person. I've always looked at causes, whether good, bad, or ugly. Even back in India, I had a little bit of political involvement also, going for protests and all of that. So one of the things for me was getting involved with these protests to help the Boston Muslims. Mm-hmm. Again, these are things that make you more part of the Muslim community, and then also become visible to others as part of the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. So that was one of my things in DC, that I started going to some of these protest marches and all of those things. And some of the people would advise me, saying, you are a student, why are you doing these kind of things, mm-hmm. right? And I just looked at them and said, hey, this is me. this is what I kind of do. And at some point, if it gets overwhelming or something, I will back off, right? So again, always giving more priority to education, more priority to all the other things that are required. So kind of backed out of that also. And then, of course, after graduating from D.C., from George Washington, I moved to New Jersey area for my first job. And there also, one of the things that happens within our community is we kind of associate closely with other people just like us, right? So when I went to New Jersey, the easiest thing for me to do as a student who couldn't afford my own apartment was to rent out a small room, and one of the rooms available there was with a mosque in New Jersey. It was like, okay, well, I'm gonna. It was pretty strange for me, but I actually lived and rented a place in a mosque when I first moved to a place called Boonton in New Jersey. And again, this is another kind of thing that starts you about, hey, this is it. This is your community, right? Even at that stage, I kind of tried to keep myself not too coupled with the mosque, so I would actually be not there and just go there for sleeping and maybe a few events here and there and things like that, right? So I kind of again went this thing. But as you get more and more into U.S. as a community, you start forgetting about your Indian identity and you start hanging around more with the Muslim identity. You will see that an Indian Muslim most probably will have more Pakistani friends here locally than like their regular old Indian friends. Because the circles get divided here once you come here, because most of the other faiths are now congregating around their faiths or their cultural activities or something that is related to their this thing, whereas Muslims are congregating in the mosques or Islamic centers or things like that. So you kind of get that separation. So you'll see more Indian, like I said, Indian Muslims having Pakistani friends than Indian friends, because that's how the social structures start going through. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, the question of marriage comes up. Marriage always, again, among the Indian community, is parents are very involved. I got introduced to my wife, went back to India, got married to her. One of the criteria that I was actually quite comfortable about was, again, I did not want a very conservative person to marry a very conservative person. My mom was okay with that. And that's how I met my wife, who was part of the advertising community in India. She was a copywriter for various social causes and things like that. So that was pretty wonderful. We came up here, came back to US, and again, the social circles is what defines a Muslim, right? We did have non-Muslim friends, but every Friday, of course, we go to the mosque. We have that. That's our central thing about being a Muslim, is that Friday connection to the mosque. Kind of like the Sunday connection with Christians, or Saturday with the Jewish folks and everything. So that's our connection, right? Had kids later on. One of the themes that happen as kids grow up is then you start thinking about their identities, right? And you want to give them that identity of a Muslim, a good Muslim, right? So you start getting more associated with mosque and activities again, or hanging around with more other friends who have Muslim kids and sending them to Sunday school and all of those, right? But again, one of the things that you would see with my own, I actually did not associate with one mosque for a pretty long time. Even though I lived in one, I again would go to other places, and not be associated just with one type of a place. Somehow I didn't feel comfortable enough, I guess, where I could say, okay, this is the only one that I want to be associated with. Till in my 30s, in my late 20s, 30s, I met some of my seniors from Hyderabad again, and we founded a startup together. They were a little bit more conservative and more religious than I am, and I don't use that, not anymore, like I was talking about my mom in terms of intellectual versus conservative. I use that more today as people who follow the rituals more, people who are very regular with their prayers, people who have that definition. Their decisions are based on a faith framework more than my own. And I think that was my turning point, actually. That was where I started feeling more comfortable being associated as seen as being part of a very close Muslim group. So we founded a company called Olive Systems in Dallas. Most of our definitions, even as a company, we would take decisions based on our faith. We actually even when we had a need for taking a loan for the company, as a board, we decided that we don't want to take a low interest based loan. Right? Again, in the Islamic faith, interest based loans are seen as bad, right? It's seen as usury. Now, personally, on my own personal side, I have a home where I had a mortgage, all of those things. But for the company, along with these friends of mine, we did not want to do that, right? So that was like, that's what I call where your decisions are now based on very much a faith framework. I was comfortable with that. I was hanging around 24/7. With this group, I was learning a lot myself about the religion. Now, spirituality-wise, personally, I do a lot of reading. So, I've done a lot of reading of my own faith as well as other faiths. So, like I said, I grew up in a Catholic school, so I've read the Bible a few times. I've read the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Hindu holy book. I've read other theological books. I have personally spent This is a little later in my life, but I've actually spent 10 days in a sighted retreat in a Buddhist monastery. Mm-hmm. So from a point of spirituality, I have invested my time and energy into that search, the mm-hmm. quest. But as a comfortable Muslim, I think I've felt very comfortable with my Olive Systems group, which kind of helped me not be so judgmental, maybe, of other people who may just follow one thing and they do one thing and that's all they believe and everything else. Maybe I had, like from my mother's side, I had grown up with some judgment about that, mm-hmm. right? But during my Olive Systems days is when I kind of gave that up. I was dealing with people who were... one of the members of the Olive Systems team was a very high-ranking official from Sun Microsystems. And one of their top salesmen at Sun Microsystems. And this guy was, to me, he's still a super great friend of mine. He was one of the most balanced people I knew who had all of his fundamentals really clear about religion and practical life, mm-hmm. right? So he became a really close friend of mine. He helped me in terms of, yes, there are always doubts, there are always questions, and then all these things are fine and everything else, all the questions and all the things that you're asking is blah, blah, blah. Yes, those are, a lot of people go through that. He kind of helped me through some of those myself. But I think that's my turning point of being more Muslim, was that during my early 30s, I spent time in a startup which was completely defined by people who were following the faith really closely. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the time I just moved to Texas. I moved to Texas in 1998, initially started in Dallas, and then came to Austin in 99 with a company called Trilogy here, and then found my own company in 2000 with this group of friends. And we kept that going for till about the 9/11 time frame, and then afterwards the whole tech scene tanked, so we had to give that up and move on. But those 1.5 years kind of helped me get a little bit more comfortable with my Muslim identity. Was involved a little bit with the Louisville mosque during that time because of the other people who were in part of the group. Louisville in suburbs of Dallas, mm-hmm. at that time. And then, of course, after that that company, we closed down that startup, I went back to my consulting, so a lot of travel and everything else. Again, that whole identity business went back to my regular self and normal. Didn't get too involved with any other mosque after that. Even with kids growing up, I taught... I sent one of my kids to Sunday school, and I saw that their definitions didn't really match with mine, so I kind of pulled her out and kind of gave my own, I taught them at home. Both of my kids have been taught by me, not going to a Sunday school as such and everything. They've learned the Quran from me. They've learned the basic principles from me. I wouldn't say they're super religious, but that's something that we want to give them the choice anyway. Let them define their identities as they grow up also. So that's where we were. About 2012, 2011, the area that we live in, Steiner Ranch, had these fires. Mm-hmm. A few of the homes got burned down. And one of the things, again, most of the time, like I said, you're Muslim within a social identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many of our friend circle within Steiner Ranch, of course, are Muslims. And one of the things we decided that, hey, as Muslims within Steiner Ranch, are you familiar with this area, northwest suburbs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
As Muslims within Steiner Ranch, we were like about 10, 12 families. Why don't we raise some funds and make them available to people whose houses got burnt down?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's going to help that, right? That idea came up just after that 2011 fires. Again, because I had, I'm involved with lots of other people. So one of the things that happens with a lot of people from the subcontinent within India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, all of these, they socialize mostly within their own groups.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about me and my family is we have been very social, whether it is with our folks, neighbors, everybody else. We're very neighborly folks, right? So we knew more people within the Steiner Ranch community. So I was basically said, hey, why don't you collect and then you figure out where this money goes. So I got together with one of our neighbors who was running a tiny church related group, helping out these fire victims. So we donated via them as well as via the Steiner Ranch steakhouse people. We kind of, that made it like a group that did something. It was an action, something good. We took our kids to go clean up the homes that were burned down in Steiner Ranch. So me, my daughters, some of the other friends' daughters, all of us, we went down and cleaned these places. We picked up pieces. And of course, those kind of things really affect you, right? When you see these people having their full regular lives, the things that you value the most, the china, the pictures, the all, and you see all of the beautiful cars, all of those, just scattered that aren't burnt
mm-hmm.
completely, right? That kind of shakes you up a little bit. So that is what got this group together within Steiner Ranch. And we were like, hey, we actually did something good. We collected close to $3,000 within that small group. And we donated to part of it to Steiner Ranch Steakhouse, who actually matched those funds. So that got doubled. And then through this another small church group, that went into other places too. So that kind of helped us define there is this little community that can take action,
mm-hmm.
right? So within a few months of that incident, we started talking about, hey, we don't really have a mosque nearby, Steiner Ranch. The closest one we had was people would go to the main mosque on Lamar and Breaker, which is quite far. The one in the south is considered very conservative, so not many people want to be associated with them. Or again, it's like one of those stricter mosques.
Right.
So when women would go there for Friday prayers, if they're not fully covered, somebody would actually pop in and tell them that they are not doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
right? So people don't feel comfortable about that, especially my wife. So we didn't really associate with that. The other closest would be in Brushy Creek or somewhere over there, which again is a little way off, right? A few of the friends within our neighborhood were pushing for this, and we liked that idea. We felt comfortable with the group, especially after what we had done after the Steiner Ranch fires. We felt like this is a group, most of them are professionals, doctors, not the super conservative, but people who believe and have faith as their underlying principle. They all want the same thing. Their kids are about the same age as all our kids, everything else. They all go to public schools or others. Some of them sent to the Islamic school and all. So we kind of felt like, hey, this is a comfortable community. We can work mm-hmm. with that. In general, I have this habit of, if I'm involved with a group, I generally get more involved with the management mm-hmm. or leadership of the group. I can't stay a passive member of the group. So I kind of took more ownership of this group along with two other gentlemen who are actually much more involved with this project than I am. Dr. Junaid Siddiqui and Dr. Rehman Siddiqui, who again I have requested both of them to come and talk to you also. So again, it's more of a comfort level type of a feeling, and we started getting more involved with ICLT. Suddenly this became real. Initially I didn't even think that it would become real. I did not think that it would become real so quickly. We had our first fundraiser and we collected a decent amount of money. And I'm like, really, this is happening, right? But that's what it took. We slowly built through that. Between three of us and also some of the other members who were helping us, we started looking for a venue, a place to build this mosque. We kind of went through a few scenarios on that. And then finally found where now ICLT is built. We felt fairly comfortable with that place. We knew it's an industrial kind of area, lots of mobile homes and everything in and around that space. But we felt like, one, it was fairly inexpensive mm-hmm. place to start with. We were getting a pretty decent piece of land, fairly flat. We didn't have to do a lot to get it started. So we felt fairly comfortable about it. And we went ahead and got that started.
And did you already have an imam in mind when you got started?
No, we did not. So when we started off this mosque, again, these are things that you start thinking about later on. Right? Mm-hmm. Initially, the idea was, let's build a place. Some of the members just wanted to get started with a portable or something like that, which is what a lot of other mosques got started off as. Mm-hmm. But somehow we had this feeling saying we didn't want to start that way. We want to actually build the place. We want to have a nice place, all of that, and let's do that. So we have a 17-member advisory group for this. So with all of this, there's a lot of work involved. And then we finally got the permits in 2015, started constructing in 2016. 2017, January of 2017, it was a Saturday morning, I believe January 7th. And again, this is one of the things that happens when you're building something, right? You get attached to the place. My phone has lots of pictures of the full construction phase. Again, this is one of the things that happens with trying to build a new place, right? I've not been associated with a place completely myself. I'm involved with this group. And we are building this place, so I became one of those guys who would take pictures of every stage of that place. Mm-hmm.
It's like your baby.
it becomes like that, yeah. Right? So you are, but like every time I visit, I would take pictures. And among the group, I am a little bit more savvy about social media. I'm a little bit more savvy with writing about things. I have a little bit more time than some of the other members within the group. They're all really busy doctors or other members within the group. So I have a little bit more time. So I kind of tend to be more involved with the place. So I took a lot of pictures and everything as it went through that process. And then January 7th, 2017, early morning, we got a call from our builder to come to the site saying there's a fire on the site. Me and Dr. Rehman Siddiqui, we both went there. By that time, it was pretty much gone. It was like completely gone. And it was getting close to the end. It was January. We were hoping it would end by March, April, and we would start in May. And we saw the whole place, and boom, it was all gone. It was just the like basically a few steel structures remaining out of that place. So that was pretty, like you said, it was our baby. That was what we were really looking forward to during that time. And of course, this came right after the elections and everything else. So it was kind of confusing stage for everybody in our life, right? So I think most of us were very comfortable, and we never thought something like that would happen in Austin. And again, I still don't believe it was nefarious or whatever for that reason, because I believe in Austin we have always been fairly welcomed, and we feel very comfortable about building that place and everything else. But it did happen.
Right. And can you say a little bit about?
Yeah.
Some believe it was nefarious, and some Absolutely. And it was never really proven.
Yeah. I can definitely talk to that. So when that happened, right? Based on the current environment of January 2017, immediately after the elections, and the elections were very basically polarizing to people, and we were seen as, of course, that was the start of Muslim ban and everything else. The immediate response from some of the community members was this was an arson. Mm-hmm. Now, some of these members are not so involved with the community, but they had already started putting things on social media, saying this was arson, somebody burned this down, all of those kind of things. Between the advisory board, also there were some members, of course, who still believe that this was an arson, but because it was not proved, and one of the things that we, between the main executive committee, which is me, Dr. Siddiqui, and Dr. Junaid Siddiqui and Dr. Rehman Siddiqui, we kind of decided that, hey, we don't want to put this as an arson, because we want to work closely with the Austin Fire Department, we want to work closely with the police, and we want to see what's going on. There was also a unit from the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms group who kind of were, I think they were more thinking that this was actually arson. But between Austin Fire Department, Travis County, Austin PD, and the FBI, they decided that this wasn't arson, this was not provable.
And had there been any kind of negative, I mean, had you had any emails or other things?
There was one incident where somebody had put in graffiti while the construction was going on. But the graffiti was more guns, or there was one swastika sign also on it. But again, we thought that was the extent it was, right? And nothing more than that. So there were signs for that, but we didn't want to take it that direction. And also, one of the things that three of us decided, actually, was the fact that it happened, right? What we have to think about is, what is our reaction to this, right? And if we say this is an arson, we are starting with negativity and hate. And we did not want to do that. We want to take this as a positive thing, right? I'm actually, so again, going through this process, one of the things that got decided was Dr. Junaid Siddiqui would be our spokesperson for all of the media and everybody else. But unfortunately, he's really busy. That fell on me. So you will see all of the recordings right after our incident where I say, look, we do not want to go at this from any negative point of view. It happened. It already happened. Whether this was arson or whether it was accidental, whatever it was, right, it happened. And what we want to tell people is that this part, because of what happened, it also brought a lot of love to the community, mm-hmm. right? There are basically churches, synagogues, multiple organizations that got together immediately in our support after that. People did not even know that we were building a mosque before that, mm-hmm. right? So we got a lot of community support out of this, and we did not want to make this into a negative thing. We want to take that positively. We had an insurance, so yes, that got burned, fine, right? We'll work with insurance to see how much they can cover out of that. We'll work with our community to start. So the immediate question was, how do we rebuild? And not how do we make this into some kind of a scene, mm-hmm. Or use this for any other purpose. So we made it clear that only official people, either me or Dr. Junaid Siddiqui, could talk to anybody outside about this incident. Mm-hmm. And if it was anybody outside of that, ICLT doesn't take any responsibility on the statements that come from other people. And I think the community actually supported us on that. I feel we had a solidarity event just 2 weeks after that, and the community pretty much showed up, both our community and lots of other communities showed up for that. And we gave that same idea throughout, is that we are not going anywhere. We are part of this community. So yes, you might have, if it was a arson, yes, you might have burned this place, but we are going to rebuild. Right, it's not like that's going to drive us away, right? Mm-hmm. We are part of this community. You will see us more. I have been pretty involved. So prior to ICLT, one of my most commonly I was known for within our neighborhood was the guy running the Viperbot robots parents group at and Vandegrift High School, mm-hmm. right? So again, those are the things, like I'm not going anywhere, neither are some of the other members that are in this community. So we are here and we have as much freedom to build a mosque here as anybody else, and that's what we are going to do. So we immediately started talking about rebuilding. Of course, the community got affected really badly. One of the things that came out was a lot of people started talking about, is this the right location? Mm. Do we want to be in a place which is more visible, easier to get in and out, maybe on 620 rather than inside of Hartson Bend, right? So a lot of people were, putting pressure on the advisory board to change the location. But then changing location also meant we'd have to go through the permits again. We'd have to go through the process of selling this place, buying a new place, going through the permits again, which would again push the project by a couple of years, right? So we went back and forth about this, convinced the community that in the interest of time, it's best for us to just rebuild in the same place. not just rebuild in the same place, rebuild the same way so that we don't have to reapply for any of the permits or anything else. So we convinced the community trusted us for doing the right thing, and we rebuilt it. Within a year, we were operational. We started in May of 2018 with our inauguration after getting everything built and cleared and everything. So we were operational in 2018. And that's one of the things that we kind of convinced our group, saying that, hey, if we think about moving the location or anything else, we have basically pushed this project out for a couple more years. And maybe that would have been okay too with people, but we felt that it was important that we actually keep the momentum and keep that going and everything else, and finish the project. And then we operated without Imam for close to a year. And then fortunately, the Imam from UT Austin, Sheikh Umar, Mufti Umar got available, so we got to hire him as our Imam also. So we believe that was again one of the blessings that came to us through that process, because he also got more involved with ICLD after the fire and everything else, and slowly as things turned out for him and UT, we were able to hire him as our full-time Imam, and now we have him as our full-time Imam. We have regular Friday prayers, we have regular Quran classes, community gatherings. Again, it's a smaller organization compared to a lot of other mosques in Austin, but we are starting off, we are doing quite fairly well. Good community from within Steiner Ranch, Lake Bay, River Place, all of the surrounding communities that are there. Another thing that we have been able to do as ICLT is now we are actually part of, so there is an organization within Austin that connects up all the mosques, and then we do like common events for high holidays, Ramadan or this thing. Now ICLT is part of that circle also, and a vocal member of that. Now we kind of feel like we have a place there within that community also, and we feel being part of that has helped overall within Austin. We are considered a little bit liberal as a mosque, don't follow as many things, but then we also, I think that's one of the things that attracted people like me, people like Dr. Junaid Siddiqui, people like Rahman, all of these people more towards what we built. And it's one of those things where you feel like if you have issues about something, you gotta be involved with building that and make it yours. And if you're not involved, your voice is not heard. And I think that's what has helped, at least in my case, to be more involved with ICLT. I do give it time, but I also think that it helps me be more comfortable with it.
You built the community you wanted to be part of.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that's our story.
It's a great story.
Yeah. It's 2:16 actually.
So the last question that I want to ask you, kind of shifting gears a little bit, is the Texan question. Tell me about what it means to you to be a Texan.
Absolutely. So I one of the things I didn't touch during my the life part of my story was I also partly grew up in Saudi Arabia. My dad used to work for what is equivalent of National Science Foundation in Saudi Arabia. So I grew up partly in Saudi Arabia. So the first time I came to Texas in the mid-90s, I felt like I'd gone back to Saudi Arabia. It's strange. But because I think the reason is a lot of Texans were involved with the building of Saudi Arabia. So somehow there is that connection, the heat. I came here the first time in summer of 96 or 97. I came to Dallas, and I somehow felt like I came back to Saudi Arabia. And that's my first impression of Texas. We really thought Texas, so being in the Northeast, you become used to people staying by themselves, like people who don't say hi to each other or people, all of those things. But in Texas, it was very common. So we felt more comfortable within Texas. I do own boots. I do own a big belt. No cowboy hat, but never felt comfortable with hats anytime, so I don't have that. Definitely Texas has been a welcoming place. This is one of the parts of our story, is the fact that I think Texas people are more comfortable with the faith also. Something that really threw my wife when we first moved into our neighborhood in Steiner Ranch was she had gone out to meet some of the neighbors with muffins and everything else, and one of the ladies asked her, "What church do you go to?" And she felt fairly uncomfortable at that time. But of course, that's one of the things that's there in Texas. Like I said, most communities are very close to the faith-based communities and everything else, right? So we feel that Texas as a whole has been really good. More than Texas, though, I believe and feel very comfortable with Austin. And I think Austin has been really good overall for us. The community that we have had our kids grow in. My second one is actually born and brought up native Austinite. Older one was born in New Jersey, but like she says, she got here as soon as she could. And we feel very comfortable being part of the Texas environment. I think overall, Texas has been a very friendly place for us to be here overall. So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you.
Excellent.
This has been excellent. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Wow. I think
I stop?